Welcome back to Chronology, ladies and gentlemen. It's your episode-by-episode recap of WWF Monday Night Raw from episode one until they decide to go WWE, and then it'll be your episode-by-episode recap of WWE's Monday Night Raw. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I'm Dave Thackera. I'm a casual drop-in, drop-out wrestling fan. He's Neil Trauma. He's Mr. I will follow this with every fiber of my being until I drop off this planet. Hi, Neil. How are you?
Yeah, buddy. I'm all right. I mean, you know, we're making our way through the spring of 1993 here on these shows. And I'm not going to lie, Dave, it's been more of a challenge to get through these early Raws than I think we thought it was going to be when we cooked up this idea back last winter.
I know, but we're in it now, and it's too late to turn back. So where are we in the wrestling world? Who has the belts, and what are these episodes trying to build
well,
to?
Well, Hulk Hogan is still the WWF champion, a decision that I believe Vince McMahon regrets with each passing week, as he's yet to appear on any of these episodes of Raw, despite shockingly getting the belt at WrestleMania. The shows are starting, as we see this week, to be built a little bit more around Intercontinental Champion Shawn Michaels, and we've already seen that the MVPs of the first 4 months of the year on Raw have really been the tag team champions, Ted DiBiase and IRS Money Incorporated. And finally, though, I feel like with this show, and you know, you'll see if you agree with us when we're done with the podcast, I think we've at least reached the point where we've got a destination in mind, because they've begun advertising the next pay-per-view, a new pay-per-view, the first ever King of the Ring, a fifth pay-per-view to turn the big four into the big five for the WWF. So we're going to start building towards that in June. And where are we in the actual world, Dave? What's happening this week here in America and beyond?
Well, you were about 8 years old. I was about 12 years old while this was happening. So it should come as no surprise that most of my focus was on my summer reading list. Well, not really. April 12th, I was actually still doing book reports. But Missing May won the Newbery Award for Juvenile Fiction. But I also spent a whole lot of time at the Wall and Gallery of Sound. So this episode aired the day before the self-titled debut album by Porno for Pyros was released. You know, we'll make great pets. We'll make great pets. Great song. But this was actually also the last Monday Night Raw that a man named Mick Ronson would see in his lifetime. He was the guitar player for David Bowie's Spiders from Mars and also played with Lou Reed and Bob Dylan. Mick Ronson would pass away before the next taping of Raw. Sorry, Mick. I know how much of a wrestling fan David Bowie's guitar player must have been. But we are back, and we are live. This episode, very much live, with no Rob Bartlett. Oh, yeah. Oh, good times.
Yes.
But we're only 2 minutes into the episode, and Macho Man, he came out with no Rob Bartlett, but he's dropping the Bartlett name. He gives us a, you know, a lot of people are wondering, where's Rob Bartlett? Macho, nobody's wondering that. There's not a single person.
Yeah, he kind of scared me there for a minute, because I thought that this wasn't actually the end of Bartlett and that they were going to, you know, say he'll be back next week. But I think this long awaited moment is here and that he is done after a hideous first couple months as the color commentator of Raw. That's it for Mr. Bartlett. Thank God.
Vince McMahon does indicate that Bartlett quit because he didn't want to be on the same show as Bobby the Brain Heenan, setting Heenan up for a heel announcer run or something. I don't know. Long story short, no Rob Bartlett, and that brings me joy.
Yes,
because that's the only thing that brought me joy for quite a while in this episode.
Thank God.
Started.
Thank God for Bobby the Brain Heenan. If that's going to be the storyline reason for why Rob Bartlett is gone, bless you, Mr. Heenan.
That match number one took place with Mr. Perfect and Damian Demento. Now, again, Mr. Perfect, he's a good 80s, 90s wrestler. Every match he's in sort of gets bumped up the card in terms of like status and what we expect from it. And this match, I guess he maximized whatever we could get from this match. It wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean, I was immediately filled with dread the moment I saw Damian Demento on screen, which took place about 1 second after the opening theme song ended. But thankfully, he is just strictly in the jobber role here, despite, mind you, Dave, Demento still does interviews to this day where he insists that he was a big star in the WWF in 1993 and was not, in fact, employed simply to lose to the Mr. Perfects and Red Roosters of the world. But here we see evidence to the contrary.
Let the man have his. He sure probably took a lot of shots to the head with a chair. If he wants to live in a world where he was not a jobber, let him live in that world. Although I will say that my parents probably hated me watching WWE during this particular time. Because you know how every time Mr. Perfect walks out to the ring, he spits his gum into the air and then slaps it away?
Of course.
I practiced that move a lot in the Thackeray house, and let's just say Mom wasn't a fan of Mr. Perfect.
Nah.
But after that match comes and goes with, again, no surprise, Mr. Perfect doing a perfect plex for the win, Macho Man does a lot of talking up of an anti-drug PSA contest that the WWF's putting forward. It's from New York City Public Schools. They're trying to keep kids off of drugs. They have adorable little, you know, kids doing their thing, writing essays about the bad effects of drugs and how they're never going to do drugs. And I guess it's a good contest. The girl who reads her thing does a pretty good job of trying to steer kids away from drugs, but
okay.
They never really spell out what the winner gets.
Yeah, I gotta jump in here. I mean, I don't care what the winner gets. What do you think the winner should get?
An automatic entry into next year's Royal Rumble?
As good an option as any, as far as I'm concerned. But I loved, I just have to jump into this. So this little girl, she's reading her essay. It's a perfectly well-written essay by, like, I don't know, what would you say she is? Like third, fourth grade kind of little girl?
Yeah, something like that.
So she's reading this essay about how, you know, it's her perspective. She's in her coffin. She's watching her family members mourn her. And it never would have happened if she didn't do drugs. Perfectly fine, dare, just say no to drugs, essay by a third grader. And then, out of nowhere, the Undertaker's gong hits, and he appears from the shadows behind this little girl to say, and I quote, "There's no hope with dope."
Yeah.
This was amazing. I love this so much more than the what was it, the march for Somalia or whatever the heck it was they did, the headlock on hunger.
Yeah,
this was so much more fun than that. I need WWF superstars every week in character telling me to just say no to dope.
Not WWE's superstars, just the Undertaker.
Yeah, really could just be the Undertaker.
I guess Hulk Hogan was busy the day they were filming, or he didn't want to do this, because he's the perfect have your vitamins, say your prayers, say no to drugs guy. Was the Undertaker the only guy in the locker room, or was it this little girl's idea to actually have the Undertaker help her out with her PSA? I need a full recap. I need a 30 for 30 from ESPN about how this PSA came together.
I mean,
I need to know what that little girl's up to now. I need to know everything.
She was writing about being in her casket, so I guess it makes sense that the Undertaker would be there. I mean, who better to tell you that if you do drugs, you will die than the Undertaker? So, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense.
Okay. Well, listen, we go from something involving death to something involving life and a major life event. This WWF episode of Monday Night Raw is teasing us with the concept of not only a wrestling fan having a girlfriend, but we're going to get a proposal on this episode.
Hey, come on now. Some wrestling fans are married. Come on, Dave. Jerk. But yes,
I know. We both are. But let's be honest. As the middle of the episode comes and goes, and they're teasing us with the concept of, you see that guy over there? You see that girl sitting next to him? He's going to propose to her live on TV. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a couple of weeks after April Fool's and they were going to pull the wool over our eyes, but they're teasing us with a proposal on Raw. Oh, wow. I'm sticking around.
You know what? I don't even think they were plants, because they're like both just like dorky looking enough that like I actually think that they legit bought front row tickets for the Manhattan Center Raw strictly so that this dorky guy could propose to his girlfriend on the air on this show. I believe that I think it was real.
But they bring us to match number two. Yeah, they teasing us with a... Again, it takes a lot for me to get interested in these episodes of Raw for the last few weeks, but if you're telling me there's going to be a proposal with that guy and that girl, I'm sticking around, no matter what the matches are. And it's a good thing, because the next match was with the Narcissist, Lex Luger, and Crush. And it's a rare occurrence that both guys have an actual established wrestling repertoire and their own theme music, and they're both wrestling each other on Raw.
Well, yeah, this is actually a marquee match to the point that I was kind of surprised they were doing it on this episode of Raw, just because I wasn't sure how they'd book the finish since both of these guys were actually getting pushed. But then I saw how they did book the finish, and it just underlines how they have just completely screwed up this crush push. Like, this doink feud is death. I mean, first, I guess, tell the people what happened.
Well, what happens is the Crush comes out in his crushness, and he's like, awesome dude guy, he's from Hawaii. And Doink comes out, another Doink appearance. Because we've had a lot of these over the last few weeks, where Doink just walks up the aisle, does his little shtick where he yells at the crowd with an umbrella, and then he walks back away. But this time, Crush is distracted by him? I don't know. You got Lex Luger in the ring. You got Crush trying to build his own reputation as an actual dude in the business. And he's distracted by a clown walking up the aisle.
Yeah, this is... these finishes are always death. And they even do it today. 2021, it still happens. People are distracted by somebody showing up on the screen to say something. And they get rolled up and pinned. Like, Crush just looks like an idiot. You're in the ring having a match. And this stupid clown is just standing in the aisle. And all right, you hate him. And even I could even see if he jumped out of the ring to try to chase him to beat him up, fine. But he just stands there yelling at him and gets hit with Luger's forearm and counted out like a complete doofus. It's just absolute death. Babyface Crush, I honestly think, could have been something. I mean, his interviews were really weak, and making him like go full on like surfer Hawaiian dude was probably not the way to go. But you know what? Right. Crush was actually over. He had a superstar look. And I mean, we'll talk a lot more about what could have been with Crush, coincidentally enough, as it relates to his opponent in this match, Lex Luger, as the summer goes on. But, you know, this doink feud, you see it every week. Crush is less and less over every week with every interaction with this stupid clown. I said it on our WrestleMania podcast. There was no reason Crush should not have, no pun intended, crushed Doink at WrestleMania and been done with it. Like, just dragging this feud on through the spring is just, like, ridiculous. It's just a never-ending feud, and it's awful.
If the history of the WWF has taught us one thing, it's that your gimmick can be overcome even if it's bad. But like you said, it's a pretty good gimmick. He's a big blonde surfer dude from Hawaii. Like, they can build off of that. They're just booking him into these appearances where he just does stupid things, loses to guys he shouldn't lose to. Again, why push him to the point where you're building up this Crush character and filming these promos on the beach in Hawaii if at the end of the day, he's going to just look at a clown and go, what? And lose a match. It doesn't make any
ridiculous
sense.
Ridiculous. And hey, don't miss out on this, Dave. There was breaking news during this match as well.
What?
Did you hear?
What?
Jack Tunney's investigation into Lex Luger's arm is completed. And
this is big news.
He's discovered Jack that Tunney Luger complete. Has a metal bar implanted in his forearm. But there's nothing he could do about it because the foreign object is contained within Luger's body.
Makes as much sense as staring down a clown and losing a match. It's good to know, however, that they are following and abiding by the WWF bylaws, where Luger is conscious of the fact that it has to be inside his body and he can't lose.
Jack Tunney is hamstrung. Is he? Dun, dun, dun. The plot will thicken as weeks go on. I can't wait. Hey, there's a new Fast and the Furious movie coming out. Not in 1993, but Peacock showed me the ad like 6 times while I was watching this show. And while I've never seen a single Fast and the Furious movie in my life, there's apparently a scene where John Cena tackles Vin Diesel off of the top of a building. And there's also another scene where they both fly off of a cliff. And I don't mean their car falls off of a cliff. I mean they drive it so fast that it's able to clear the massive ravine after jumping off the cliff. And I may need to see this movie.
I suggest instead of seeing that movie, you spend the money on buying the ad-free package on Peacock like I do. Because this is the first time hearing of this, because I don't get those ads.
Why would I want to spend the money on that when I would have missed out on this awesome trailer, Dave?
Speaking of trailers, they're bringing us a promo. They're talking up King of the Ring. Now, this episode takes place in late April 1993. King of the Ring, the pay-per-view is going to be June 13th. So we've got more than a month of build for what's going to be coming next. Now, because King of the Ring is a new concept. We need to break it down for our audience, right? It's going to be a single elimination tournament style bracket match a la March Madness. And we're going to start with some single elimination matches, I believe, next week on Raw, featuring Bob Backlund versus Lex Luger and Mr. Perfect versus Doink. Neil, again, these are guys with pedigrees. We're not just going to get squash matches moving forward, at least for a few weeks. This is good news.
Well, Dave, I hate to burst your bubble, but you, sir, were obviously not paying close enough attention, because you would have learned that the Lex Luger versus Bob Backlund match will be taking place on Superstars, and the Mr. Perfect versus Doink match will be taking place on Wrestling Challenge, neither of which from the summer of 93 are available on Peacock. So you'll just have to stick with the King of the Ring report with Mean Gene or Sean Mooney or Todd Pettengill or whoever it's going to be to let you know what happened in those qualifying matches. But not to ruin it on you too much, I'm reasonably certain at least a few of the matches will take place on Raw. At least I know there's a famous one that does. So you're going to get to see at least one of them, I promise.
Fair enough. All right.
But at least we're building to something. Just, I'll take anything. I'm just glad to hear them talking about something. I was afraid they were going to tell us again how WrestleMania was the greatest show of all time and where we could buy the videotape.
Are we ready to move to match number three, or should we talk about what happens in the meantime? I just said I don't pay for the Peacock, or I pay to not watch the Peacock commercials, but that doesn't mean that I get to skip the commercials that are actually in the episode of Raw.
You want to watch those? We don't need to talk about the next match. The next match is Mr. Hughes versus Jason Knight. Who gives a shit? Let's talk about the awesome WWF action figure commercial from 1991 that they were still airing on this show in 1993. Did you, Dave, pause the commercial during the scene where they show the ring filled with toys so that you could take note of where all of those wrestlers are today in 1993? Because I did.
I didn't need to pause. I know exactly where they are. They're in the ring, always preparing for their next match.
You've got
the
British Bulldog, who is in WCW.
Right.
You've got the Texas Tornado.
Wait,
at
the time?
Yes, at the time this commercial aired, all of these toys were in the ring. These are the toys you can buy to play with. British Bulldog in WCW. Sergeant Slaughter, retired. Earthquake and Greg Valentine, gone. I don't know where they are, but they're not in the WWF anymore. And the Texas Tornado, who is competing in the Great Ring Beyond, because Kerry Von Erich was dead by the time they aired this commercial. Of course, you could still get Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart and The Undertaker, so you still could get a few active wrestlers, including the Macho Man, Randy Savage, who is shown in the commercial in his Macho King attire from 1991.
Well, here's the thing. If you're going to invest all that money in producing these toys and they're not sold out yet, yeah, you still got to push them. It's not like they can just airdrop a whole bunch of WWF toys into Africa like they do with the Super Bowl loser shirts, right?
Well, I mean,
you got the toys on the shelves. You might as well play them.
They made new toys, though, is the thing. I mean, Dave, do you think I didn't own every one of these toys? Do you think they're not still in a suitcase in my dad's basement right now? I own them all. They had 1993 toys. There was a giant Gonzalez toy. I could tell you that for sure. You know, you could buy some of the guys that are featured on the show. Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, IRS. I had all these toys, but they're not in the action figure commercial because apparently it was only in the budget to make one of these every 5 years.
Speaking of things that took a long time to get there, we've got match number three. Yes, you refer to it. It's Mr. Hughes versus Jason Knight. I am looking at this. I watched this episode a few days ago. In my head, I can't even picture who Mr. Hughes is, and I can't picture who Jason Knight is. It's a squash match. What else can we say?
Well, how could you not remember Mr. Hughes? He's the guy who wrestles in a shirt and tie. No, not IRS, because we apparently needed another guy who wrestles in a shirt and tie. He's the guy with Mr. in his name. No, not Mr. Perfect, who wrestled earlier on in the show, because we need another guy with Mr. in his name. How can you forget the big black man in the shirt, tie, and bowler hat who went out there and basically moved like an actual boulder with feet and wrestled in a match. I don't know why the WWF kept employing Curtis Hughes. I don't even know where he came from. Mr. Hughes has never been on Raw before, and this was not a debut with fanfare like Friar Ferguson. I guess he was winning squash matches on Superstars, and we're all just supposed to care who he is, but he comes out, and his storyline is apparently that he's looking for a manager. So, I can't wait.
Well, he's a big, bad guy.
Yes.
So he's terrifying. But everyone was so enthralled by this match that Bobby Heenan was flipping to other stations and trying to order some porn.
Yeah. Why would you even give people the idea that they could change channels during this match? Because you know they'd want to. And then this was a bit of a miscue. As he's flipping through the channels, he stops a couple times on the Braves game where you actually see a rally taking place. So on the offhand chance you like baseball, they're actually telling you, turn on the Braves game on TBS and you're going to see some runs getting scored. But this time it didn't work. But yes, I did like Bobby Heenan going to the Scramble channel and saying that he was going to call the 900 number to purchase what they were showing.
It's kind of like it's tempting your audience to do things that have unintended consequences. Like many years ago when the President Obama was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and he's cracking all these jokes about, Donald Trump running for president. And history has shown what happened after that. You're daring people to turn on a live sporting event that's somewhat compelling. Baseball in 1993 was, Braves are on. It's a big deal.
Braves are good.
Yeah. Go ahead. Change the station. We're going to give you Mr. Hughes and Jason Knight, or you could watch the Braves play.
And of course, as wrestling fans do know, there is some unintended hilarity in showing the announcer on Raw tuning his TV to TNT during Raw. And we'll find out more about that a few years down the road.
But after this, they're telling us that there are more commercials in an episode of Raw. This time it's a promo to talk about the brand, the newest tag team that's going to take over the WWF. We've got the Smoking Guns making their debut appearance in promo form. Bart and Billy Gunn on horses.
This was great. So they're on their horses. There's the most stereotypical cowboy Western stock music playing in the background. I don't remember what the guns say, but they ride away on their horses and they literally shout, "Yeehaw!" as they ride away. Short of the time that they had a wrestling pirate who literally did a promo where he said, "Yar!" This was the most on-the-nose thing they've ever done, and I loved it.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of depth in these characters yet. It's two dudes, their name is Gunn, and they're riding some horses. I can only imagine what their debut is going to be like in the WWE. I bet it's going to be against Money Inc. And the match is going to be a 15-minute... No, it's going to be a squash match against two random dudes. We'll just have to figure out who that is in a few weeks.
Maybe but after that, will be Von Cross. Oh, wait, no, let's not get ahead of ourselves. What happens next?
Shawn Michaels comes out for an interview. Now, again, because these episodes of Raw are somewhat difficult to get through because it's just a steady stream of squash matches and the usual dudes, it was kind of stunning to see someone holding a belt on Raw who wasn't the Million Dollar Man, who wasn't IRS. But he's coming out and he's talking up and he's doing a pretty good heel promo. He's defending his title next week on Raw versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah, I mean, Hacksaw Jim Duggan being the number one contender kind of came out of nowhere because I don't think we've seen him since those like early Raws where, remember they used to show the clips of Yokozuna killing him, and was it on Raw where they'd have the interviews like where his wife would be like pleading with him not to come back to the ring, or is that Superstars? Did we see that on this podcast?
Not really.
Okay.
I guess.
Well, that was a storyline that happened, I guess, off of Raw, so we don't need to talk about it. But I guess Duggan is just back now, and he's just wrestling for the Intercontinental title, which is fine. And Shawn Michaels is pretty good here. I mean, he's not full-on Heartbreak Kid, but, he's getting there. He holds his own. He carries his weight. He has the swagger of a champion, and he is going to be, a featured player on these Raws, because let's face it, they can't feature the WWF champion because Hulk Hogan is off making Thunder in Paradise or the Three Ninjas 5 or whatever that stupid movie was he was in. So Hogan's off doing something, and it's not defending his title. So they got to build the shows around someone. And frankly, I'm happy to see it be Shawn Michaels than some of their other options as we've seen on these shows.
Well, again, we're proving that we are live, uncut, uncooked, and uncensored, because the chant going through the audience is Shawn is gay. Shawn is gay. In 1993, a devastating insult.
Yeah, and what is it? Bobby Heenan chimes in and he goes, oh, listen to them. They're chanting Shawn is great.
Classic Heenan. Love him.
Mr. Perfect.
But at the end of this, Mr. Perfect comes out for a confrontation. Wonder what they're building to with these two. Could it be perhaps a match?
We shall see. We shall see, Dave.
Well, they're teasing us with Shawn Michaels and Mr. Perfect, two of the best wrestlers on the planet at this exact moment. They're teasing us with that. And then they give us match number 4, Typhoon versus Von Krupp.
Seriously, why is Typhoon winning squash matches on Raw?
Because he's a big dude? I don't know.
Terrible. Terrible. Did you happen to catch Von Krupp's hometown?
I didn't.
He is hailed as being from Germany.
Okay.
I mean, it's better than when they claim that someone is from the Orient. At least they narrowed it down to a country. But still, that's a pretty wide swatch of land right there that we were narrowed it down to. But all right.
In the middle of this match, and we don't really need to get into the depths of a Typhoon and Von Krupp match. I'm sure the internet is clamoring for it, but we're not going to do it. They pick up the phone and they call Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Now, he says during this call, because again, live TV, why wouldn't you pick up the phone and call someone in the middle of a match? He says it's his first chance that he's ever got at a title. Neil, let me ask you something. Is that true? Has Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who's been around at this point for like decades, has he never gotten a sniff of a belt before now?
Well, I pride myself, Dave, on being able to spout the answers to random 90s wrestling trivia questions. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a high-profile Duggan title match. Now, to give the really short answer to your question, is this true? No, because I can tell you for certain that Duggan was in the 92 Royal Rumble, which was for the vacant world title, and he was in the WrestleMania 4 tournament for the title. So, I mean, it's not his first ever chance to have a championship. Did he ever have a one-on-one match? There's a very good chance he didn't, to be honest, because Duggan was one of those guys, especially in the early 90s, that for some reason there were these guys in the WWF that just never lost a match, despite being mid-carders. Roddy Piper, famously, never got beat. Bad News Brown simply would never agree to lose. And Duggan was another one. So whenever Duggan had a high-profile match, it was always pretty much guaranteed to be a double countout or a double DQ, or he'd hit the guy with his board and get disqualified and lose that way. So I could see them not giving him a match. But on the same note, if I were to look at house show results, I'm sure Duggan had a match against Mr. Perfect when he was the Intercontinental Champion or something along those lines, or Ric Flair when he was the champ in 92. He had to have, but yeah, for TV, I guess it makes a fine story that Duggan never had a singles title feud until now, but it's we're going to say probably not true. You know, when you go on to Snopes and they give you like the green light true, the red light not true, and the yellow light, we'll go with the yellow light. It's probably not true.
But nobody wants to hear from Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Everyone at this point who's still watching this episode, who was in it from the beginning, wants to know about the proposal. Let's break this down. Let's talk about it frame by frame, Zapruder style. Talking with your background as well. So how did you propose as a wrestling fan with a girlfriend? How did you propose to your now wife? Did you actually go to a taping of Raw and do it there as the most romantic place on the planet?
Well, I mean, let's be perfectly honest here, Dave. My wife is not my wife today in any way, shape, or form because I'm a wrestling fan. She is my wife in spite of the fact that I'm a wrestling fan. So my wrestling fandom had very little to do with my proposal. I did get to have a few wrestling references at my wedding, so maybe we'll talk about them at some point in the future. But no, my proposal, my proposal played off of my other unhealthy childhood fandom, which would be Disney. And I had my proposal at Walt Disney World while we were there on a vacation together. So how about you, Dave? Did any of your unhealthy fandoms happen? Maybe did you put like a soccer ball with the ring around it or something? What did you do?
Not really. I dragged my then girlfriend, soon to be fiance, into the woods for a fantastic hike. We'd been threatening to do it for a while. I picked the day before I looked at the weather. It was downpouring. And she's looking at me the whole time like, are you sure you want to go for a walk? It's like wet. I'm like, no, it'll be fine. It's nature. Maybe it'll stop by the time we get there. Because I didn't have a plan B. So I just went with plan A. But she was like completely sopping wet like a fish, but managed to say yes in spite of that. So
well, you
know, it's led to a long and fruitful marriage. But if I had a do-over on that, I would like to take it. Although my do-over, I can guarantee you, would not involve being at an arena for an episode of Raw.
Now, Dave, I somehow didn't know this story. I mean, let me first of all say that that had pretty much the happiest ending you can have to a story that starts with, I dragged my girlfriend into the woods. So thank you for having that better ending. But second of all, despite us being like really good friends for a really long time, I don't think I knew that because my proposal was also supposed to happen outdoors and was also thwarted by a torrential downpour. We were supposed to be engaged under the fireworks at the Magic Kingdom, except it rained all day long. So I ended up having to do it inside at a restaurant instead, which was my plan B. So kind of funny that I guess that's the problem with outdoor proposals. You never know when.
So maybe
Mother Nature is going to.
Hey, maybe this dude had the right idea. He's dragging her inside. Apparently, she's along for the ride for Raw. And Bobby Heenan walks over to him, and the proposal. He sort of starts making fun of this dude, but the proposal eventually happens, and miracle of miracles. Dude, she says yes.
I mean, Bobby Heenan being Bobby Heenan, at the beginning of the show, he threatens to do everything in his power to make sure the proposal doesn't happen. He wants to foil the proposal, but it does happen. I was feeling like a Mandela effect here, and we're going to find out as we move through these Raws, and I'm sure there's, you know, one or two of our listeners right now at least are going to know what I'm talking about here, but I have a vivid memory of a proposal between two fans with Bobby Heenan in the front row of Raw. And it's not this one. So I don't know if there's another proposal or if this really was fake and they somehow did two proposals. And the one I'm remembering was on a tape. And this one was the one that actually aired on Raw. Or if it's like a Mandela effect. And like, I just completely imagined that other proposal. And this is the only one that ever existed. But I guess we'll find out as the months go on.
Well, they do make a point of asking her, do you want to get married on Raw? And she shuts that down in a hurry.
Yeah, good for her. She's like, she really did have the look on her face, though, of, I didn't even want to be here in the first place. He dragged me here. Yep.
And you're putting me on camera. Come on.
So wacky.
Well, it's good to end on a high note like that. We ended on a proposal. The episode, the matches were bad. The promos were interesting and entertaining. See the smoking guns and see the Undertaker talking about drugs. Remember, there's no hope with dope.
Yes.
But overall, are you going to remember this episode of Raw for the rest of your life?
I mean, no, probably not. It was weird because after, you know, we watched it, we kind of texted each other and both kind of agreed that it was way better than the ones we've been watching. And in hindsight, as we review it, it was really kind of crappy, but it just felt better and more entertaining while we were watching it, which I think, I mean, the only thing that changed really was Heenan replacing Rob Bartlett. So maybe it was just all Bobby Heenan just making this show better by sure willpower alone. So we thinking, does that make him our MVP?
It has to. Yeah. It absolutely has to. If Bobby Heenan has taken place of a giant black hole of suck that is Rob Bartlett, and this episode's better, that's how you determine an MVP. Yeah. He's got my vote.
So Bobby Heenan is our MVP of this episode of Raw. Better episodes of Raw to come, I think.
Including next week, where we feature the Ugandan giant Kamala and the head shrinkers and Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Shawn Michaels. All right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how Mr. Hughes didn't put us past our quota of wrestlers who compete in shirts and ties. And for certain, having the head shrinkers and Kamala on the same show puts us past our quota of wrestling savages. But we'll find out if it's overkill or not on the next episode of Chronology.
If it happened on Raw, you'll hear about it here. Where can people find us if they're not actively listening?
PlaceToBeNation.com. Listen to all the other great podcasts there on the pro wrestling feed and the pop culture feed and all the other feeds there at The Place to Be. And of course, you can always find us wherever you find your podcasts, be it Spotify or wherever it may be, Facebook. Just Google us. You'll find us. I mean, you must have stumbled stumbled upon us somewhere if you're listening, so you just keep stumbling on us in the same place.
Episode 15 next week. We will see you then.